Hello, and welcome to the Slow Style Home Podcast. If you don't want a cookie cutter generic home, and instead you want a beautiful, meaningful home that's layered with personality, then you are going to be so inspired by the conversations we have on this show. We talk about why the environments we create matter and how to set up our rooms to evoke specific feelings and experiences that are right for you wherever you are in your life right now. I'm Zandra, your host and creator of the Slow Style Home Framework that teaches you how to make really thoughtful and informed decisions about your home rather than chasing current trends that may not last or staying stuck with rooms you hate, feeling overwhelmed with too many choices. Right now, when you join our monthly membership, the Slow Style Society, you'll get a personalized deep dive into your vision of what a dream home looks and feels like. And together, we'll come up with a plan on how to achieve that. If that sounds pretty awesome to you, go to slowstylehome.com and click on Join the Society for all of the details. I'll tell you a little bit more about it later on. Right now, let's just jump into today's episode. Dana Che Williams, welcome to the podcast. I just want to give you a quick introduction because you are not a typical guest for the show. Dana is a speaker, a marriage and relationship coach, and the host of the Real Relationship Talk podcast, where she helps people uncomplicate relationships and build deeper connections. On the podcast, she is known for her graceful candor, her humor, and encouraging yet challenging relationship advice. She holds a BA in communication from Regent University, and she shares her life with Sean, her husband of 24 years. They're four amazing children, and their quote-unquote multicultural dog. I'm going to have to ask you what you mean by that. She lives in Virginia Beach, Virginia. Dana, welcome to the show.
Hey, Zandra. So happy to be here with you today.
Great. So I am going to throw a bunch of scenarios at you. They're sort of compilations of things that I have heard from people who listen to the show all around the base desire of how do I get my partner to do what I want them to do? And of course, that's a funny place to start. But it said a little bit tongue in cheek, but I think there's a deeper question there, which is, you know, it's one thing to get a spouse on board with a throw pillow. It's another thing when, you know, you're talking about really creating a home that reflects who you are and that is basically your canvas for growing into who you want to become. And so therefore, I think these issues are a little bit deeper, and that's why I brought you on.
No, I think it's so important. I love your take on this because it isn't just the surface issue. Like, we can't agree on the paint color, or we can't agree on should we renovate that room or not. But these issues do go deeper into, even as you open up the show, how do I get my husband or my wife or my partner or whoever to do what I want? And really, at the end of the day, if we're honest, I think that's really what it comes down to. We want our partner to do what we want.
Right.
And we're not going to be successful if we keep that same train of thinking.
That's right. That's right. All right. So we're going to come at this from a couple of different angles. So let's get into some more specifics. Let's start with the first scenario, which is my partner hates spending money and it's really hard to get them on board, especially with major makeover, let's say, or a major renovation. And sometimes these people even confess to me, I hide smaller purchases from my partner when it comes to decor just to avoid an argument. What would you say to this person?
I think we've got to reframe the whole statement, my partner hates spending money, because okay. The truth is we all spend money on what we think is valuable. Mm. So a quick reframe is instead of thinking or saying my partner hates spending money, it's my partner loves saving money. So if you can appeal to the saving money side, then you're going to have more success. So for example, let's say that you're like, okay, that we've got an old white refrigerator from the 1990s that's just totally dating our kitchen. and you go to your spouse and you're like, hey, we need a new, brand new $3,000 stainless steel refrigerator, right?
Right, well, with all the bells and whistles. Yeah.
Exactly. They're thinking, no, we don't. There's nothing wrong with that refrigerator. It works. It functions. It keeps our food cold, which is the purpose of a refrigerator.
Right.
So if you can say, you know what, there are these new refrigerators that actually will save us 20% on our energy bill every month.
Yes.
And it's only $3,000, which in the long run, the thing is going to pay for itself in such an amount of time. I mean, you have to do your math, right?
Sure.
But if you can appeal to the fact that it's not that they're stingy or cheap, most likely, it's that they like to save. So how can we actually appeal to the fact that they like to save? Then I think you're going to have more success in getting them on board with your idea.
Great. Just flip it around. And I think that's even, it's a little bit more respectful as well, because
sure,
you're recognizing it as a strength. Yeah. How about this one? My partner won't make any changes that they think will affect the resale value, even though we plan on living here for a very long time.
Yeah, that's a tough one, because it's living in the future, right? Instead of living in the now. And so I think that this is like two value shifts here, two value differences. If someone is more like, you know, we're going to sell this house in 20 years and I don't want to make these changes because in 20 years, then this thing might not happen. Really, that's a scarcity mentality. So it goes even deeper than just, I don't want to make changes today. So I think if you can appeal to what the real fear is there. Like, okay, are you afraid that we're not gonna be successful in 10 years or 15 years whenever we sell this house? Can we actually talk about the now? We live here now, and tomorrow is not promised. 15 years is not guaranteed, but today is. Today is all we have. And so I would like for us to make these changes because I want our house to be more modernized. I want our house to be more comfortable. And we'll just have to figure out what's going to happen in 15, 20 years when we get there. But let's try to focus on the now and really live in the present.
Yes. And seeing the gifts of that. There's so many gifts to living in the now, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. So I think this one piggybacks on that one, because it's my partner can't imagine doing anything bold. You know, they want to keep all the walls the same builder grade beige that we moved in with. And I think that it's similar in that there's a fear there. They're trying to appeal to everyone. Well, not everyone's going to like, you know, a dark navy blue dining room. Right. So beige is safe, and it's safe for resale, and it's safe for our friends that are coming over. And I mean, would you agree? Do you think that's a fear-based thing, or do they just really, they just really like beige?
I have an uncle who is a diehard Cowboys fan, and he turned the basement of his home into like a Cowboys sanctuary. I mean, he literally marbled the floor blue and gray. It looks amazing.
I bet it does.
But like, oh, yeah. But like when you go down there, it's Cowboys everything. So I asked him, I said, wow, I guess you guys aren't ever moving, are you? You know, I just kind of said that tongue-in-cheek one day. And he said to me, he was like, oh, I don't know if we're going to move, but I know that we live here now. And this is what I actually want my room to look like now. So again, it kind of goes back to the first, the question that we just talked about a while ago, that we can make plans for the future. And what if this doesn't sell? But you live there now. And so if you want to go bold, go bold. It's just paint, you know,
right.
Can paint it over when it's time for you to move. But I do think if one spouse has more, or one partner has more of a simple aesthetic desire, and then the other person is kind of bold, then there does have to be some compromise, or, you know, what I even like better is collaboration on both sides, so that both partners can feel like they're both getting what they want.
So let's just stick with that dining room example. One person wants this deep, dark, navy, let's say, dining room wall color, because they primarily use the dining room at night. There's candlelight. It's moody. It's for sophisticated grown-up dinners. And the other partner is like, I don't like any dark colors. I want light and bright and white everywhere. Where's the common ground there?
The common ground is to find out, and I teach my clients this all the time, how can you both win? So if the idea is I want it nice and dark and I want the mood to be set, can you achieve that same goal with maybe blackout curtains?
Oh,
so that mm-hmm. during the day, if you want, you know, it to be open and bright, like the one partner who likes bright white light, well, during the day, we can keep those curtains open and it can be that. But then in the evening, we can close those curtains and now it turns into more of a serene, more calm sanctuary.
Yes.
Can you maybe incorporate some design elements into like the tableware or into artwork so that you're still bringing in those deeper, moody colors, if you will, but you're not completely overhauling the room so that the spouse or the partner who really likes bright white, when they walk in that room, they're just like, I hate this room
because
it doesn't reflect me in any sense.
Right.
So again, the goal is collaboration. How can you win? How can I win? How can we be creative so that when we both walk into this room, we're seeing elements of ourselves and we're seeing things that we actually both like?
Right. And I would add to that layering some lighting. I mean, lighting can do wonders for creating mood. So that, you know, I mean, putting a dimmer switch on, but also having, you know, sconces and candlelight. And, you know, I mean, there's ways to kind of get that feeling. I love the blackout curtain idea. That is such a good one. But I'm really listening to you though about the, how do we have a win-win here? Cause that's the point.
Yes.
That's what can be applied throughout the home.
Totally.
All right. Next one. My partner doesn't want to do anything too permanent because they think it'll be a pain to change later. Wallpaper comes to mind. A lot of people absolutely say no to wallpaper because all they picture is, you know, getting out all of those tools and scraping it off. But these same people, I tend to feel like they resist even putting a hole in the wall. Like, mm-hmm. Oh, I don't want to hang anything up because then we'll have a hole in the wall.
Mm-hmm.
So what do we do with that? How can we find a win-win in that situation?
Well, if you're sold on that wallpaper, then you may need to say, okay, guess what? You don't have to do any of the work. I promise you that when it comes time for us to move, if we're going to move, or if it comes time for us to redo this room, I will not ask you for your help at all. Mm. I will go and rent the machine to pull that wallpaper down.
Love it.
To, you know, I will do whatever. I will spackle the paint, the paint holes or whatever from the markers that when we put stuff up. So I think if you can let your partner see that you're not asking anything of them, you're not asking them for their time, you're not asking them to help you with this, but it's something that's really important to you and that you are willing to take full responsibility for putting it back in the same condition that it was. If, again, you get to that point of resale.
Right. And I guess you could say the same thing with a hole. I mean, first of all, what I always tell people is that nail holes are actually quite small. And I promise you really are not going to notice. But if you do, spackling takes 2 seconds. And if you keep a little jar of your wall paint color in your basement for touch-ups, then it really is, it's so easy to fix. Okay. This is, forgive the stereotypes. I think we're moving away from really strong, like, this is what the wife wants and this is what the husband wants, kind of thinking about relationships, but those still do exist. And often what I hear is that my husband will not get rid of this god-awful, ugly chair or couch or whatever. It's usually a chair or a couch. It's something that he typically loves to fall asleep in or watch TV in or whatever. And the wife, again, I know I'm being stereotypical here. Let's say she's on the other end of the scale. She's like all flowers, all, you know, pink, everything. How are these two people going to come to some sort of agreement?
I think you've got to put those items in a space where they're not seen by everybody.
Okay.
So if the ugly oversized chair that's got holes in it and sweat from grandpa, you know, but you just love that chair because it reminds you of your grandpa. Can we put that in the basement? Can we put that in the room somewhere, the guest room or maybe even our bedroom off on your side?
Right.
Can we like get that out of the general population of the home?
Yeah.
Can we, your beautiful flowers and, you know, pink and all of that stuff, can you actually do that in your office? Can you do that in an area that is not for everybody? And so making those small consensuses and saying, you know, I understand. This is the thing, Sandra. It's when we are in relationships, we need to always think about, I have to prioritize the relationship over my preference.
Okay.
So if it's important to you, it's important to me. Okay. It's not enough that it's not as important to me that it's in the living room for everybody, but right. It is important enough that you feel represented in this home because you have to live here too. And I want you to feel comfortable here too. But that thing right there, it's just not, I don't think it's going to work in the living room for everybody
else. Yeah. I think another thing that tends to happen is one of the partners says, I don't care. I don't, you know, do whatever you, this is not my thing. I don't care what anything looks like. And I think the people on the other side of that, so they often, at least they start out feeling like fantastic. I can do whatever I want. But I think we're missing something crucial here when we sort of allow that to happen. And maybe it's true. Maybe there are some people that truly do not have a reaction to their environment. And so they really don't care. How do you get somebody to care a little bit more?
We'll be back after a quick break.
I assume you're here because you want a one-of-a-kind, personality-filled home, right? Well, in order to have that, you need to define and develop your signature style. When you do that, you're going to understand how to mix what you already have with new things you find, focusing on who you are and what you love, putting it all together in a cohesive way. So what's stopping you? Well, let me know if this sounds about right. Not enough time, not enough money, and a lack of creativity or design knowledge, which makes you feel overwhelmed and insecure about pulling the trigger and changing things up. This is why I created the Slow Style Society, to help you take action on making your dream home a reality. It's part social club for people who like to just geek out on design, and part hands-on learning experience where you get better and better at making decor decisions for each room in your home. And for the next few weeks, I'm offering all new members an additional one-on-one style session with yours truly. So I'll take you through the lessons so you know exactly what to focus on inside the Slow Style framework, in what order, and you'll have a personalized support system from me to get you there. Go to slowstylehome.com and click on Join the Society so we can get started right away. Let's not wait for that imaginary perfect time to create your beautiful, meaningful home. Again, go to slowstylehome.com and click on Join the Society. Okay, back to the episode.
That's good. I think that that goes deeper to general apathy in the relationship. Yeah. If, for example, you know, I'm a very kind of strong, opinionated person. My husband is very mild-mannered, easygoing, he doesn't get rattled very easily. So it's easy for him to just kind of go along with everything that I want, right?
Right.
But then when you realize the danger in that is that they really do have opinions, they're just not always sharing them.
Yeah.
And if you, like you just mentioned, if you're not careful to recognize that, then that easygoing partner can actually then become resentful because yes. They feel like their opinions aren't ever really valued or they're not really getting their way, if you will put it that way, in the relationship. So
right.
To say to someone like, this is what I do with my husband. We redid our fireplace.
Okay.
My husband was like, I don't care. Do whatever you want. And I was like, okay. So I showed him some samples, even though he didn't, quote, care.
Okay.
And I was like, all right, this is what I'm thinking. I know that you don't really care, but what do you think about this, right? And I found out he really did care.
Ah.
So I started to see him being like, oh, I like this one, or I don't really like that one. And I would say, well, what about that one don't you like?
Yeah.
And then he might say, oh, that it just looks a little too bold. Okay, so noted, he doesn't like bold things.
Right.
So he might not come out and say, I don't want you to do that because it's too bold. He might say, oh, it doesn't matter much. But then when you press a little bit and when you say, you know, I get it, I know you don't care, but I just need a second set of eyes. I'm
right.
Act like you're confused, right? Like
I like
confused.
That. I need a second set of eyes.
I need a second set of eyes.
Yeah.
And so what do you think about this? And they'll pretty much tell you if you phrase it that way. But right. If they're like, I don't care, and you're like, cool, I'm going to go to town and do whatever I want.
Right.
Then internally, they're not going to feel valued, even though they weren't forthright with their opinions.
Right. Right. And you know, you do hope that they can step up and not squash down all of their feelings. And you don't want the relationship to be built on that either. You want everyone in the house to feel like it's their home.
Exactly.
Right. You want that's, I mean, and maybe that's what you also can say is, I want you to feel like you live here too. I don't want this to mm-hmm. be my home that you're visiting.
Right. And I'll tell you that even for children, you know, we have four kids.
Yeah.
We've got two adult kids, two teenagers. And my 16-year-old told me the other day, he was like, Mom, for Christmas, he wanted blackout black curtains.
Okay.
Oh my goodness. I am a white, light, bright, happy person. Okay. I don't want black curtains in my house. But you know what I thought? That is his room.
Yeah.
I don't ever go in there. Like, you know, I very rarely do I go in my teenage son's room because it's just a.
You want to avoid it. Yes.
Exactly. So I thought, is this really hurting me to allow him to have blackout curtains?
Right.
It's something that he really wants. So I said, you know what? We're going to buy the curtains for Christmas. He was so happy we got him these curtains. I mean, 16-year-old boy, right? Like, who wants curtains?
But
that's what he asked for.
Well, he wanted a certain experience or feeling in that room. Yeah, I get that.
He does. And so I thought, you know what? This is not hurting me. And I think that that's something that we have to sometimes think about. Sometimes we push our way so much. But if we just stop and pause and say, is this really, honestly, is this taking anything away from me? Yeah. Is this really hurting me? Can this thing that my spouse or my partner or my child even wants, can that bring them happiness?
Yes.
And if so, well, then that's going to bring me happiness. So let's do it.
Yes. Yes. Absolutely. All right. Two more scenarios. And then I want to ask you some more generalized questions about relationships.
Okay.
So this is a big one and it's about the TV. A lot of fights about the TV. Typically one person wants it front and center. It's the focal point of the room. It's usually in the room that is most public, oftentimes on top of a fireplace. And the other partner is, okay, the TV, I get it. We watch it every day, but it's ugly. And I definitely don't want it on top of the fireplace because that's the best thing about the room. I'd rather put a piece of art up there or whatever, or leave it blank. How do we deal with the TV? Why is the TV such a source of conflict in couples?
I think that is one of those unspoken value pieces.
Okay.
For example, if there is, let's just, I'm being stereotypical here, but let's just say that the wife is more quality time.
Okay.
And she's like, I believe that our time spent in the living room should be around playing games and having conversations and enjoying ourselves as a family, not staring at this black box all day long. I don't want it in the focal point of the room because that's just going to underscore our need to watch it all the time.
Right.
So even though she might not come out and say that, that might be kind of behind the scenes what's really going on, which is why she's pushing so hard that TV not be the focal point of the room.
Yeah.
Whereas, let's say the husband in this example loves to watch the games and he's like, nothing would bring me greater joy than to sit in the center of my couch, prop my feet up and be able to look straight ahead at that game. I don't want to have to turn my head. I don't have to go sit in another chair over here. So I think that when people actually get real about like, what are their real values, then if you have a loving, supportive, respectful relationship, then you can both say, okay, I get that. I get that you don't want this to be the focus of the room. Mm-hmm. And that's why you don't want it there. Sometimes that's enough for you to just come up with your own compromise. Mm-hmm. But I also think if the issue is the TV is ugly and I don't like it there, can you afford a better TV? Can you afford a smaller, sleeker TV that actually looks aesthetically better in the room?
Yeah.
You know, there's so many like different styles of TVs now. And so like, can you actually maybe be creative and do something? Can you put a border around the TV? Can you do something that brings some life to it? So it's not just this big black rectangle
void
in the middle of your room.
Right. Yeah. My hope for everyone is that they actually have two rooms in their house, one for TV watching and one for everything else. Because when you have friends over too, you know, you talked about not wanting to turn your head to watch the game. Well, it's the same thing when you're trying to have a conversation with someone. I don't want to have to turn my head because we're all facing forward because it's oriented toward the television. I don't have to turn my head for a long conversation with my best friend or whatever. So truly the problem with the TV isn't it's just a very different activity than having conversations or playing games or connecting with people, right? And
Absolutely.
So therefore the furniture arrangement is when it's ideal for each situation, it's two different furniture arrangements. So I always really say, is there any room in your home you can convert into your little den where it's your TV room, as opposed to trying to make that living room do both? I mean, there are definitely ways to do it. You've already named some, but sometimes there's an empty room that, you know, you could actually consider being the TV room. Mm-hmm. And another TV question is TVs in bedrooms. What's your thought on that?
Yeah, this is a personal one. My husband and I actually had a disagreement about this because I don't watch TV that much. I mean, very rarely. If my kids, a lot of times, oh, mom, you got to watch the show with me. I'll watch the show with them, but I don't just watch TV. That's not something that I normally do. My husband loves TV. And so he wanted a TV in the bedroom. And when we first got married, we had a TV in the bedroom. And I used to watch more TV back then. So when we moved into the house that we're in now, I was like, okay, we're no TVs in any rooms. My kids don't have TVs. They've never had TVs in their rooms. And so I told my husband, I don't want a TV in our room, because when I go into my bedroom, I want to decompress. I don't want noise. I don't want the football game on. Like, that's just not the environment that I want to be in.
Right.
So he was like, but I do. So I said, well, I will make it worth your while not to have the TV in the room. So my thing is, if you have a spouse that's like adamant because that's how they decompress, or, you know, that's what they want, that entertainment before they go to bed at night, honey, you might have to become that entertainment.
I love it. I love it. We're getting real now. I love it. Yes. I want you to get on board with what this bedroom is for.
Exactly.
Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah. All right. I want to talk a little bit more generally about just conflict resolution. How to convince someone of something. How do you convince someone?
You know, I go back to the basics of respect and understanding that each partner brings a valuable contribution to the relationship. So even if I feel really strongly about something like the TV, I felt really strong, passionate about that. I do not want to sleep in a room with a TV, like passionate.
Yeah.
But I have to also realize that my husband's opinions are just as valuable. Mm-hmm. So when I approach a situation, regardless of what the situation is, if I approach that situation with, this is what I want, and I'm going to do everything in my power to get you on board with what I want, then I've already lost.
Okay.
Because now I'm willing to do anything to get what I want, and I'm not valuing or prioritizing the relationship.
Yeah.
But when I say, you know what, this is what I want, I feel very strongly about what I want, but so does my partner. They feel very strongly about what they want. So what I want to do, instead of getting them on board with my thing, I want to open up a conversation where I get to understand them. I say all the time that the purpose of communication is not agreement, but understanding.
Okay.
So I want to get to a place where I can understand them and where they can understand me, and we both together can come up with a solution where we both feel like we can win.
Yeah. Yeah. I love that. I think opening up the conversation, because otherwise you're starting at the end point. This is the end result that I want. As opposed to starting way, back it up a little bit and say, okay, this is how I want to feel. This is what I want to experience. How can we make that happen together? Since you do have four kids, any advice on helping them do stuff around the house, like their chores, putting stuff in the stuff away, respecting your stuff, maybe respecting the space, that kind of thing?
Mm-hmm. You know, I was raised doing chores, you know, from the time I was very little. My mom, you know, instilled that in us. You're a part of this household. There's no maids here. And so we're all going to contribute. And I remember when I had two small kids and I'm trying to do laundry this day, and my mom was happened to be over at the house visiting. And she was like, Dana, you have kids that can help you out. And it literally had never dawned on me.
Isn't that funny?
Isn't that crazy?
Especially since you were raised that way. I mean,
exactly.
Yeah.
It never dawned on me, like, wait a minute. Like, my son at the time was like 8. He can fold his clothes.
Right.
I'm not going to kill him by making him like do his laundry.
Yeah.
So I started that day to start to implement chores and the value piece of it, to say to my kids, you're a part of a community. And this is what parents, we have to realize that by giving your kids chores and teaching them to clean up their room, it's more than just so your house can be neat. Mm-hmm. It's preparing them for the real world. You're a part of a community. Yeah. And a healthy community, everybody contributes. There's nobody just sitting around with their hands crossed waiting for a handout. Right. We're all contributing and we're all going to put our hands together to make this community, this little household, what yeah. we want it to be. So by you taking the dog out, by you loading the dishwasher, by you sweeping the floors, like we all have a role to play here. Mm-hmm. And so I think if you can appeal to your kids' value of, yeah, we're a part of a family
belonging.
And we all contribute.
Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah. And also you're treating them more grown up, right? You're giving them responsibility.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
You're giving them responsibility. And then when they don't do it, then sometimes you'll have to apply a consequence. So for my kids, you know, and I've gotten really creative about this. You know, I don't like to go to bed at night with like the yeah. house unkempt. So okay. I don't want to come downstairs and like fall because your shoes have been left at the bottom of the stairs,
yes.
book bag. So I said, okay, you guys, guess what? At the end of the night, you need to take your stuff up at night. You can take it up as soon as you get home from school, or you can take it up when you go to bed. All I know is that when I come downstairs in the morning at 6 o'clock, if I come across any of your things, it goes in the dollar bin. And we've been doing this for years.
Yeah.
You can purchase it out of the dollar bin for $1.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
They don't want to give me money, of course.
No.
So, and I don't need their money.
No.
So the thing is, I'm teaching them a principle, though.
Yeah.
So I don't get upset. I don't have to yell. I don't have to badger
yes.
them.
Yes.
It just simply goes in the dollar bin.
Yes.
And there's no questions because they know the deal.
Oh, and I think that's a really good point too. Let the consequence be how they learn, not a consequence with you yelling about it on top of it. Just let the consequence do it. Then you can keep a calm voice.
Oh, that's right. Because that's what real life is like.
Yeah.
You know, like if you do what you're supposed to do, then great. If you
yeah.
don't, life, and I tell my kids all the time, I can be your teacher or life can be your teacher. Life is not a merciful teacher.
Right, right,
so
right.
I'm
they don't care about your
help
feelings.
You guys. Exactly.
yeah.
So I'm trying to help you guys. So yeah.
Yeah.
Let
well,
the consequences teach them.
And I think too, a lot of us, we get mad about the kids leaving their stuff out or whatever. And we use words that we're conveying is, I want it to look pretty. And the kids don't care about that. So,
right.
so it's not about that. It, when you talk about, no, it's part of the job of this family to upkeep this house. And we all have a role to play in that. Then it's not even about the stuff anymore, which I think is really what you're saying.
Absolutely. It's about respect. It's
yeah.
about honor. It's about, if you went to your friend's house
yeah.
and you ate at their house, they invited you over, would you leave your dirty plate on the table and your napkin? You
right.
wouldn't do that. So why would we treat someone else's home better than
better.
We treat our own home?
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. So as we're wrapping up here, I wanted to point out a great resource that you have that covers a lot of what we said. We were looking at it very specifically through the home angle, but this resource that you have is great for many different situations, and it's called Conversation Starters for Couples in Conflict. So how can people get their hands on that?
Yeah, so they can just simply go to my website at danashe.com. That's danashe.com/conversation-starters. And in that free resource, they're just going to get a few places to start, because mm-hmm. a lot of people, they know that there's conflict or maybe there's impending conflict. And a lot of people are conflict avoidant because they
yes.
don't even know how to start the conversation. So how do we start the conversation? I'm going to give you some ways to actually start the conversation again. And the goal is not that you get what you want. The goal is so that you can broaden the conversation, learn more about your partner. They can learn more about you and you all can come to a consensus, a mutual
yeah.
understanding.
Yeah. Great. Great. Okay. I'm going to link to that directly on the show notes page, so you guys don't even have to memorize that. And also, I will link to Dana's podcast, which again is called Real Relationship Talk. And you can find it right here where you're listening to this podcast. And anything else that I left out that you want to mention, Dana?
This was really fun, Zandra. I love the whole conversation about the house, and in the house, you know, the home represents so much of who we are. And
yeah.
so I think that sometimes couples get really tense and they get really, upset about like certain design elements and things like that. But if we can just realize that like our home should be a home of rest, peace, safety, mutual respect and honor, then it will make some of these conversations a little bit easier to have.
Yeah. Starting with that common ground, which I really think most people want to have in their homes.
Yes.
Yeah. Thank you. Thank you so much for your time.
You're so welcome.
Thanks so much for listening. I know your time is valuable, and I really do appreciate you spending it with me. And please, please, please take a minute to leave a review for Slow Style Home wherever you get your podcasts. It honestly does help keep this show on the air, and your feedback is highly valuable to me. Have a great day, and I'll be back in your earbuds soon. Bye for now.